And welcome to the program, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC. And, oh my gosh. welcome to the program. We've got a lot to talk about, and I'm going to just jump right into it here. Before I do, let me give you an update. Last week, we were talking about the college Republicans at UCI. And what happened? Well, they were just on a technicality, basically banned from campus for a whole year. And I told you, I said here, it was very clear that UCI couldn't do it, that they were taking a procedural rule that they probably weren't applying evenly to all groups across the campus. And when you use a procedural rule, a technical rule, and you enforce it against one group and silence one group who perhaps has an ideology that you don't agree with, if you're a state school, if you're a government-sponsored school, you can't do that. Well, guess who took a smart pill? UCI, and they caved. Yes, they reinstated them, basically said, oh, we're just going to give you a formal warning. They cited a lot of code. But bottom line, they blinked. And we here on the program, Sam Nation, are very pleased to report that. Way to go, College Republicans, UCI. Now, these millennials, I just want to point this out. These are millennials that we can get behind. But there's only like 10 of them. I remember, so I always talk about this. I was a college Republican at UCI. This was, I'll just tell you, this was when Clinton was president. But it was a big election year. It was in 99-2000, we had a big, Bush was in, right? 98. So, no, 2000. I got it all wrong. I'm upside down here. So yeah, 2000, it was a big election year and we were so done with Clinton, right? All the scandals and everything. And what happened? Yeah, 2000. Exactly. But there were still only like 20 of us in the group. It was an election year. We were fighting to get rid of Clinton and we didn't want Al Gore. And there were still only 20 of us in the group out of a school of thousands. Anyway, we talk about millennials here, and we talk about how it's a millennial-free zone, because this is a program for adults, smart-thinking individuals, free thinkers, but perhaps if you're listening, you have a child, 25, living at home, unemployed, no, just kidding, maybe you have a nephew, a niece, friend's kid, and this man-child is insufferable with their opinions. Or maybe you're listening to me and saying, Well, Sam, what do you know? What do you mean? I mean, come on. What do you mean about this? Well, I'll give you an example. I was just telling producer Robbie about this a few minutes ago. I was at a restaurant. I was in San Francisco, bastion of left-wing lunacy. And there was a couple that came in, and they came in with their son, who appeared to be, I don't know, somewhere between 17 and about 25. I couldn't tell. And this kid, they started talking about Brexit, which, of course, I'm going to get to in a minute. But I think I bring up an important, brings up a crazy point. So this kid's talking about Brexit. His mom sounds pretty reasonable. And the first thing that the kid says is, well, it was a close vote. If you're not following this, of course, Brexit being the vote on June 23rd, where the British people voted to leave the European Union. There's something called Article 50, and we'll get to it. I'll explain all the technical side of it. But there is a means by which member states of the EU can leave the union. They can invoke Article 50 and leave. And so what this was a referendum. It was an advisory vote. And a lot of boo-hoo-hoo is made about this because Everybody's saying, oh, it's just advisory. It's advisory. No, this is going to happen. OK, don't believe the articles where they're telling you that Britain's going to stay in spite of the vote. It's not happening. But also, how many times have you heard in the last week and a half people telling you, oh, it was a close vote? I've read it in every article. So there I am. I hear the kids say it's a close vote, and my ears perk up because I like to listen into other people's conversations. And the mom says, No, what are you talking about? It wasn't a close vote. It was 4% difference. That's a big deal. And the millennial spoke. Wise words falling out of his mouth. No, it was 2%. So, in case you missed it, 48-52, mom reminds son of this, at which point son says, no, that's 2%. I wanted to stab the kid with a chopstick, okay? It's not, the mom says, no, it's 4%, 52 minus 48. At which point I just lost track of the conversation because it was giving me heartburn. That right there, these stupid idiots just parrot what they hear in the news. He read in the news somewhere that it was a close vote. And this is why you listen to the show. We explain these things beyond the headlines. And that's what we're going to do. Because it wasn't a close vote. Let me tell you, 4% in a national referendum is not a close vote. 4% in, let's say, an election for president would result in an most likely, and if you look back at the races where there were landslide victories, 4% difference in the popular vote translates into an electoral college landslide. Okay, so don't let anyone tell you that this Brexit thing was a close vote. Now, Brexit, again, in case you're behind on the lingo, Britain exit, right? It's a play on words for Britain exiting the EU. And why did it happen? So I think the best way to understand it, I'm going to take you back a little bit in history because it's the history of Europe in the 20th century and understanding where the European Union came from, what caused it to come about, is really important to understanding why it is what it is today and why so many people are fed up with it, because it's not just the Brits. Do not think that this is a one-off thing. This, you know, the Brits are off there in the island, you know, doing their own thing. No, they're not. Because there are other countries that will follow, and you've listened to my prediction. There are other countries that will follow. The 20th century was for Europe an unimaginable series of disasters that we as Americans just don't comprehend. We don't understand it. The world when my grandfather was born in 1908 outside of Prague, which was then a part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, was nothing like the world that he died in. Okay, what I mean is he was born in 1908. He died in the 90s. And I'm not going to do the math right now. I think he was a citizen of like 5 different countries, but he lived within 20 miles of his birthplace. You and I, if we've lived in the U.S. our whole lives, have no concept of this. The upheaval, the changes, the tosses and turns of fate that occurred in Europe in the 1900s are simply unimaginable to us. And so following two world wars, right, World War II ended in 1945. The end of two world wars, finally people, the attitude was enough is enough. It can happen. You know, World War I barely ended and World War II came. You got to understand this all happened in very quick succession. World War I ended in 1918. 1919, the New World Order came about. European boundaries were redrawn. And aha, something happened. And what? Politicians began redrawing boundaries based on liberal fictions. So stop me when this sounds familiar, because I am, for those of you not following me, drawing a parallel to what is now the EU. These boundaries and trying to lump a bunch of countries together in one giant European superstate can't work because it's been tried, done before, and failed. Well, what was I talking about? The end of World War I, they took a country like Austro-Hungary, chopped it up into different pieces, and what did they do? They made this country Czechoslovakia. I know about this because it's where my family's from, so I can tell you about it. You've got Czechs and Slovaks forming Czechoslovakia. Now, to give you an idea how culturally similar these two countries are, the language that they speak in one versus the other is more similar than how we talk in California and how people talk in Nacogdoches, Texas. I am, as a Czech, I am more likely to understand a Slovak speaking Slovakian than I am somebody in down in Mobile, Alabama. Now, if you're down there, I'm not mocking you. I'm just telling you, I don't understand this. And I don't understand what you're saying a lot of the time. And the reason I point this out is here you've got two countries that are very, very, very similar. They are first cousins, if not fraternal twins. And they divorced in 1994 because they were just too different. They didn't want to be in the same country. And so political efforts to lump countries together fail. So now when we come back, I want to talk to you about what happened after World War II, how this EU thing came about, and then I'll explain why that was the beginnings of the end. That was where the first pieces came together, and this is why the Brits are so pissed off in other countries too, and more countries. I actually think this is the end of the European Union. And I'll tell you why. Back after this.
What are you doing this weekend? I'm James Bergener, and I'm listening to Sam Nation right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
My dad was born in 1941. 1941, that's really not that long ago if you think about it. It's a German protectorate. The Nazis ruled most of Europe that year and did for the following 4 years. He remembers bombings in Prague. World War II Allied bombings. So anyway, I'm bringing all this up. We're talking about Brexit. And I'm explaining to understand where the European Union is headed, which is not a good place. I think it's on life support, honestly. To understand why it's in such dire straits, you got to understand why it came about, where it came about, and the kind of people that pushed it. So, 1945, World War II has ended, and because of all the tumult and changes and wars, two wars, I mean, just the Russian front alone. There was a historian that described it as the greatest meat grinder in human history. Think about that. That was just a little war in Russia. I mean, it's unimaginable what the war was in Europe. So anyway, people said, never again. And that's an overused phrase, right? That's a hashtag probably trending on Instagram. Never again. We don't want this to happen. And the idea was there was this declaration made, and I think it was the French minister. Of course, it's always the French that come up with the brightest ideas. But it was called the Schuman Declaration in 1950. So just 5 years after the end of the war. And the premise of it was we would like great trade cooperation and economic cooperation with Germany, because through economic cooperation, through trade, we're ensuring peace in our time. And now it sounded good. You know, Germany had this prime minister, his name was Adenauer. He was the big reconstructionist guy. He was the person who created modern Germany. And one thing you've got to understand, the underpinnings of the EU, this is this is You're not going to hear this anywhere else, okay? Because I've scoured every article. I've read all this stuff, and I keep looking at them saying, you're missing the most important fundamental point. Have you ever been in a relationship that is founded on guilt? Have you? Don't answer it, but especially not if your wife is in the car. But I want you to understand that. It's a rhetorical question. Because when you're in a relationship that is founded on guilt, and trust me, no one felt greater guilt at the end of World War II than Germany. It's a shame because the Soviet Union should have felt some guilt too, but victor's justice. When you're caught red-handed with a whole bunch of concentration camps and piles of dead bodies, you've got a problem. And that guilt, I'm telling you, I know this because I spend a lot of time in Europe. It's in my blood. It's my heritage. I'm telling you, German guilt continues to this day, 60 plus years later. And the reason that Germany, in effect, responded so positively to French overtures is their desperate attempt to prove that they were a different Germany. They were a compassionate Germany. They were a Germany that was prepared and ready to atone for what it had done. Now, just like an interpersonal relationship that is founded on guilt, that's founded on obligation, that's founded on regret, a relationship, a diplomatic relationship founded on those, political relationship founded on that, is going to be problematic. And so the first sort of economic cooperation zone came about somewhere in the 1950s and continued to develop that, ultimately blossomed into 27 states, okay? And it was sold to the people of Europe. It was sold to them and the countries that participated as a free trade zone and as a free travel zone. So the idea is, and it's nifty because the benefit is if you live in Italy and are an Italian citizen, you can move to France. No different than if, let's say, you're a resident of California and decide to move to Maryland. But there's a problem. And the problem is that it's when you have a country like, let's say, the Czech Republic, 10 million people, economic opportunities better in England. So what does every young 20-something-year-old Czech person do? They say to themselves, I want to learn English. I want a job that pays me good money. I have no opportunity in my little crappy little town where I live. And so I'm going to pack my little suitcase. I'm going to get on a train. I'm going to go or get on a plane because that these days is almost cheaper. I'm going to get on a plane. Take EasyJet, right? You have to pay to use the bathroom, but fly to London, get a job as a waiter, get a job anywhere, take whatever money they give me. I'm going to learn English. But this is a problem. This is a problem because it's the same problem we're facing here. You understand? We have people essentially coming here from Mexico, taking jobs. But Sam, they're jobs we don't want to do. Whoa, wait a minute there. Hold on. It's supply and demand. If I've got 10 positions open and there are 20 applicants to take those positions, I can offer minimum wage on those jobs and I can get it. If I have 10 positions and 8 applicants, what does that do to the wages? Well, I got to compete with the other guy who's got 10 positions open. So how do I compete with him? I pay more. I say, hey, come work at my restaurant. I'm going to pay you minimum wage plus $3 an hour. And we all pay a little more for our food, but our workers get a minimum wage. And this is why you have to have an immigration policy. Okay, we're kind of talking about it in our own election here, right? It's a hot button issue. But you have to have an immigration policy that makes sense and that balances what our needs are what our labor needs are against how many workers we have out there in order to protect the wages of the workers that are already in the country. And there's nothing racist about it. And it happened in England, in Great Britain. You had Czechs, you had Poles, you know, people from Greece showing up by the busloads, taking jobs from British youths. And there was nothing Britain could do about it because they were part of this union. And this is just one of many issues, okay? I don't want to make this the only issue, but you've got to understand that. And the Brits thinking, well, we just signed up for free trade. We signed up for, you know, it made sense. You know, we wanted to be able to travel, but we never envisioned that all of a sudden thousands of people are showing up every week at our border and we can't deny them jobs. Guess what else they can't be denied? Welfare. That's right. Gold Star. So people are shopping around for welfare benefits. Well, yeah, well, you know, it's kind of like bums going to Hawaii and then Hawaii sending them on one-way tickets back to the mainland. get out of here. Because being a bum in Hawaii is great, right? We talk about, well, we crap on Hawaii all the time. I love Hawaii. You just are all a bunch of crazy liberals out there. Anyway, so that's it. You know, there's countries where that had better welfare benefits and you know, Great Britain, God bless them, but they're, I mean, it's terrible. And so all of a sudden you had this thing develop where what started out as just free trade was ultimately turning into becoming almost one country. But Sam, no, don't be absurd. The EU is not just one country. It's not one. That's not, Sam, that's not what it's about. And I have this argument with so many of my worldly, left-leaning friends. You know who you are. Wrong. Because in this original letter, going all the way back to 1950, is language describing a European superstate. It's in there. And it talks about a political borderless union, a one nation concept. Now this is just crazy, right? Because you've got so many different countries. You know how we laugh, you know, we call it flyover country in the US. If you're on the left coast or you're on the east coast, how many times have you really been anywhere in between? It's a part of the country that many people, even people in government, especially people in government, they don't even know. They don't know you good folks out in Nebraska. In fact, they look down on you. They think you're rubes. They think you're a bunch of nincompoop farmers out there. They're fine, you know, reaching into your back pocket and pulling out all the money you make. You know, they're fine with that. But you guys are rubes to them. We're one country. One language. Now take a... What does Sweden and Italy have in common? You know that... You know, absorbing a country like Italy in with a country like Sweden or Germany, you know that Italy's a tiny country by comparison to the U.S., even by world standards. It's a tiny country. Economy, I don't know where it ranks on the economy scale, but I read... Do you know where they rank in debt? They rank number 3 in debt. Missy, are you surprised? I mean, look, if you're Italian, I love you. You've got great food. You got beautiful cars, lovely women. But you know what? Your sense of economics is basically retarded, okay? Your national airline, let me just give you one example here. Alitalia is the most bankrupt, poorly mismanaged airline in the world. But they've got like a $500 million art collection in their headquarters? I mean, priorities, right? Priorities. And the whole country is run like this. They've got like 2 trillion euros. What's that, like $3 trillion in debt? So how do two people get married like that? I'm going to explain to you what a marriage looks like between a husband who's got all his shiz together, has a cash savings in the bank, is organized, has an 820 credit rating, and gets married to a beautiful woman who has like a 550 credit score, has BK'd twice, and owes $70,000 in credit card debt. I'm going to tell you exactly what that looks like. Back after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation every weekend.
You know that most Americans had no idea what Brexit was. We're talking about Brexit, right? The divorce, the velvet divorce between Britain and the rest of the EU. Britain voted June 23rd to bail on the European Union. It wasn't a close vote. I was talking to you about the stupid kid earlier who thought that it was 2%. The mother had to tell him, no, no, 52 minus 48 is 4%. Thanks very much. So here's the funny thing. For one day, on June 23rd, when the news broke, this Brexit thing actually came on our radar because people's 401ks started melting. Yeah, if you woke up on Friday the 24th and looked at your 401k, you probably dropped dead. But don't worry, it's all going to come back. You're going to be fine. But so in that 24-hour period, Google reported that the word Brexit beat the search term porn to be the most popular search term of the week. Yes, parents, if your little kids have a tablet, they probably are searching for porn. But I'm going to tell you what search term you ought to put in. Sweet James Attorney. That's what you need to Google. Because look, it happens. You know, you're driving along, somebody hits you, you're somewhere, you slip and fall, you use a product, it hurts you. You know, hey, maybe you got a little e-cig habit and the damn vape thing just blew up in your face. What are you going to do? You're going to call the company? You're going to go hassle some insurance company? Think Allstate's going to take care of you? Heck no. Don't do it. Don't go down that hole. Remember this. The insurance companies, these corporations that make a bad product, all they care about ultimately is making money. And we here at Sam Nation, we celebrate capitalism. We are all about it. So we don't think that should be taken away, right? We don't. But what we do know is that if you want to be taken care of, you can't be so naive to think that the company, that insurance company for the guy that hit you or that company that owns the e-cig, whatever, they're going to take care of you. Because every time they pay a claim, that's money from their bottom line. They don't want to do that. So what you need to do is make Sweet James Bergener, Attorney James Bergener, the first call that you make. 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit him on sweetjames.com. Brexit. Let's talk about this. So, Italy, you know, I was ragging on Italy in the last segment. If you missed any of this, go to samnation.com. That is a safe term to Google. Sam Nation is safe to Google. I certify it as safe, parents out there. That and Brexit. Google it. But we're talking about Italy and what a sad sack country it is. I know it's beautiful. I love the food. I was all the great cars, no doubt. But just economically, it's a mess. And you know what? It's actually, I'll tell you a little aside. It's not even fair because, you know, Italy in and of itself, the next 100 years may not survive as one country. You know, we're talking about the EU breaking up. I'm here to tell you that if you're Italian, you know what I'm talking about. If you live in southern Italy, if you live in the south, well, better yet, if you live in the north, you don't like those people down in the south because they're a bunch of rubes. They're lazy. They work 4 hours a day. And if you're in Milan, you're pissed off because out of the national budget every year and, you know, spending ridiculous money on all sorts of ridiculous things, most of that is coming from your tax money, from the north. And that's because Northern Italy is just culturally very different from Southern Italy. That's right. If you visit Sicily, it's just not quite the same thing as being at like in Lake Como. Anyway. But the reason I'm getting at this is for now, for purposes, we just got to say Italy is one messed up country. It's not the world's biggest economy, but they're number three in world debt, in total debt owed. Yeah, I know, we're number one. But at least we've got a big economy to back it up. Number one! Number one! That's right. I started a studio cheer. People are looking at me. What are you doing? Well, not quite too proud of that. But Italy, would you ever think that Italy number three? Well, I would, because I've been there. But okay. So then I said last segment, it's kind of like, you know, you get one really fiscally responsible person marrying a complete joker. And you, if you've been in a relationship like that, you know what I'm talking about. It doesn't work, because what happens? Yeah, you marry, let's say you're a gal and you've got everything figured out. You've put money away every paycheck. You've got $15,000-$20,000 in savings. And you meet your dream guy, and he's amazing. You love him. He's everything you ever hoped a man would be. And then, guess what? Somewhere, somehow, you figure out he only has like a $500 credit limit on his credit card. And you realize it's because his credit sucks because he BK'd twice. And he's like $50,000 in debt. Now what? I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, don't do it. Don't get married. You'll end up like the EU, because here's the thing. You've got an economically prosperous country like Germany who got to where it is being disciplined. There were lean years. There was austerity. Germany had to rebuild after World War II. And, you know, and I understand it was the aggressor. I understand all that. But, you know, Germany had to go from zero to being the leading European economy. Had to build its manufacturing from the ground up. They're a nation of savers. I'm not just talking about the government. I'm talking about the people culturally. They're savers. And so you've got Germany, where basically they're Lutheran, right? They're these, you know, they're just these, you know, you basically hear soft organ music playing in the background. And then you've got the Italians. They're like, hey, viva Las Vegas, hey. Okay. Wah, 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 wah. Brit, Germany, right? And yay! Okay, and they get married. And guess who has to bail out who? It's no different than the relationship between two unequal, financially unequal spouses. Because eventually they want to go buy a house. They want to go something. They want to, because it's no different. There's a joint credit rating for the EU. It's no different. You want to create a European super state? It's a joint credit rating. And what happens when you've married somebody with a 550 credit score and you've got an 850 FICO? Are you going to get that dream house that you saved for? I'm going to answer that. No way in hell. It's not going to happen. So how do you feel when you're a German? There's all this talk, right? Germany is the Germany, you know, Angela Merkel, right? The president of Germany. Or the chancellor of Germany. Germany is the rock. They're bailing out. You know, remember the bailouts? You've got Spain, you got Greece, everything. And I talked about this earlier. If you're just tuning in, I talked about how guilt was the founding reason for the EU and how it's been a driving political force in this whole thing. And here's what it comes down to. The Germans that are in power, the baby boomer post-war generation, they feel the guilt. And so their policy is to help Greece, to help Italy, to help Spain. Okay? Which means hand German taxpayer dollars to help them. How would you feel if we became one country, if NAFTA suddenly became this one nation, and we became one nation with Canada and Mexico, and we, our tax money was going to help rebuild Mexican schools, Mexican roads, pay for Mexican school teachers' overdrawn retirement funds? How would you feel about that? I'm not asking you what Obama feels. Obama would love it, but I'm telling you, you the worker bee, me the worker bee, we the taxpayers, we are not going to like that one bit. And what you have is a brand new generation in Germany for whom the war, people my age, for whom the war is, it's before our time. There's no original sin. Yeah, okay, you know, maybe my grandfather was in the German army, whatever. I don't care. It's not me. I'm not a Nazi. It was terrible what we did. But it doesn't mean that half of my paycheck is going to go rescue some, dinky Mediterranean country of a bunch of people who've been profligate spenders and haven't saved the way I have. And what the German government, what the French government, what the founding members of the EU don't understand, these politicians, right, that are running this, they're so out of touch. They don't understand that the voters are done. They don't want to keep bailing people out. They don't want to be in a marriage where they're giving and the other party is taking. And that's how Britain felt. Great Britain, the people of Great Britain, 52% of them said enough is enough. We don't want to keep giving. We've got our own problems here back home. We don't want to accept all these immigrants coming over from other EU, poorer EU countries. And they voted. And it's not, and here's, I'll tell you, I got to tell you why it's not just a populism thing. And why it's even more dangerous, the results here are even more dangerous for Hillary Clinton's chances at becoming president than I think anyone is even, you know, writing about or considering. Back after this. Sam Rujofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
This is Attorney James Bergener. I get the best news and information for the week from Sam Nation every weekend on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Don't believe a single poll right now. Don't believe it. Because I'm telling you this, we're talking about Brexit, and we're talking about, if you're just tuning in, how we're handling all this stuff happening in Europe. But Great Britain has voted to leave the European Union. The world is upside down, up in arms. But there's something fundamentally important about the vote, which is that no poll taken any time before the election that happened on June 23rd, even the polls taken the day of, yeah, that's right, there was a poll day of, not an exit poll, an opinion poll. None showed the campaign for out, the campaign to leave, ahead. And why is that? Well, I'm telling you, I think it's the same principle here is going to play out in our presidential election this year. Because, you know, The leave campaign, the people that were for leaving the EU in Britain were painted as xenophobic. Please stop me if this starts to sound familiar. The people who were for leaving, you know, if you were, let's say, an office worker in London, and you went to the water cooler and you said to your pal, "Yeah, I think, you know, I might want to leave. What do you think about that, Gov?" You were immediately labeled a xenophobe, a racist, A small-minded little rube. How dare you? What, you're saying you don't want to integrate people from other countries into our great nation? Who are you? What, you're saying that we should turn our backs on Europe and isolate ourselves? Or what are you? I mean, the only thing I read, you know, I a bunch of articles on Brexit and everybody's talking about how vitriolic it was. It was vitriolic. But it was the Remain campaign that was vitriolic, not the Leave. It wasn't. Read the different positions. Look at the debates that happened. You know, Boris Johnson, who was the Lord Mayor of London and will be the next Prime Minister of Great Britain. He was the face of the Leave campaign. And he has been, well, there's talk that he is the Donald Trump of Great Britain. Yeah, well, he speaks from the cuff. He's off the, you know, he's not a traditional politician. Very different from Trump in many ways, but he is Great Britain's Donald Trump. And I would watch these debates, the debates that preceded the vote to leave, and I was looking at them and I was saying, I mean, he was just getting attacked. He just stood up there and everybody was calling him a racist. Look, you know you're losing the argument when all I can say is racist. Now, if you are a Trump supporter, how many times do you, how do I put this politely? How many times do you not say what you're thinking for fear of being attacked as a racist? Huh? I think there's quite a few of you out there. I do. And so here's the point. People for these polling companies would call people at home. I'm calling from polling company X, and how do you feel? You remain or leave? And these people would be on the phones, you know, their family sitting in the living room, and they'd go, social anxiety, remain. Okay? In their heads, they're like, hell, screw this, you know what? F this, I'm out of here. But you know, Piers Morgan, he wrote a little op-ed piece following the vote, and he talked about his own family. I know Pierce and crazy guy, I'm British, but he's a British guy. And he voted to remain, but he talks about his family. He talks about how his own brother was for staying and another brother was for leaving. And you know, the family's divided and that kind of thing was going on across the country. People were really divided. In a polarizing election, when people are divided, and when one side basically is calling the other side a bunch of rubes and racists, there aren't too many people on that side who want to sign up for being called that. And you know what? I might be talking to you. Might be talking exactly to you. Because, you know, I'm not voting for Hillary, fair disclosure. So when I go out there and I say, yeah, I'm voting for Trump, and I say it in mixed company, well, people know I'm a loudmouth, and I don't care what anyone thinks of me. Everyone, you know, they can kiss my Trump-loving ass. But I'm going to tell you, I get people kind of come up to me and go, yo, give me like the tiniest little thumbs up. I don't even know if this is their thumb. What is that thing you're showing me? So, anyway, I bring this up because you've got these polls that come out that show Hillary 12 points ahead. I just don't believe it. I don't believe it at all. There was a poll that came out on, I think, Wednesday last week. It was a Quinnipiac poll. Respected poll. And everybody's making hay because, oh my gosh, it's a dead heat. It's like one of the closest polls taken recently. And it showed Hillary only 2 points ahead of Trump. And the Illuminati, the big thinkers, the inside the beltway politicos, all the people who are not listeners of this program are hand-wringing and going, this can't be right. This, oh, it's too close. This is not possible. And you know what? For once, I agree with them. But not but not because I think it's whatever it was. I don't remember 48 to 46. Well, all you have to do is go through that poll. And in that poll, it breaks it down by nationality and different, you know, education levels and all that. And one of the headings is blacks. 99% for Hillary, 1% for Trump. And I am here to tell you that that is not true. And you know what? If you've had one eye half open the last 6 months, you know it's not true. Blacks have been left behind in the Obama economy by the tens of thousands. Hope and change? First black president? Nonsense. Complete and utter empty promises, nonsense. But I can tell you what happened. You got a five African Americans at home. They get a call from a pollster. How many of them are going to say, yeah, I'm from Trump. I love Trump. No. That guy's looking over his shoulder saying, oh, yeah, well, you know, I'm really unhappy. I'm going to vote for Hillary. Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm going to vote for Hillary. Because nobody, if you say you're voting for Hillary, nobody is going to, well, I am. I'm going to tell you you're an idiot. But, you know, people are going to be like, oh, okay, I get it. You know, you don't like Trump. I get it. You're just voting for the least unpalatable candidate. Good for you for being reasonable. I mean, that's the narrative. But I am telling you, if Trump keeps on the straight and narrow and doesn't go off into kooky land, come November, when people are in that booth alone, when they are casting their vote for president and they are by themselves, the pollsters are in for the surprise of a lifetime. Does anybody here in California remember Prop 8? You remember Prop 8? You know, it wasn't cool to go out and stand on a street corner and say, hey, I'm not for gay marriage. I don't think gay people should get married. So everybody, you know, pollsters would call, are you for, I'm undecided. You know, I'm undecided. Or I'm leaning towards no. And then Election Day comes around and wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. And look at what happened. I'm just telling you, this is the takeaway from it. The big takeaway from Brexit is pollsters get it wrong. Pollsters get it wrong, and they're getting it wrong here because this vote for president is just as contentious as the one for leaving the EU. And it's the same accusations being thrown out by one side against the other, racist, xenophobe, and so forth and so on. And I'll tell you what's more. It's not just this. There's also a substantive component, which is to say that the vote in the EU is for national sovereignty. It's not populism. Populism is this overused. This is a very, very pejorative term used to describe people who are rah, rah, America. Okay. Oh, a bunch of rubes. They don't understand where we fit in the global economy. Oh, don't be so backwards. Think big. Think beyond our borders. No, I'm telling you, it was a vote for national sovereignty, a recognition that I want my paycheck to stay, my tax money to stay local. And that's the best thing our country has going for us, is that we are a federation. We are a federacy of states, states with rights, states that are sovereign, that have individual powers. Okay? Stop me if all this sounds familiar. And it's because people in Texas want to be governed a different way than people in California. People in Maryland want to be governed a little differently than people in Alabama. And it's why the American experiment has worked and worked so well. And the left wants to eliminate it. The left's dream is to eliminate it. And people in Europe are rejecting it. And people here are going to reject it too. And that's why the Democrats don't have a prayer in November. I'm telling you, that's how it is. So, back tomorrow, 6 p.m. Tune in, 6 p.m. I know it's dinner time, but put me on. If you want to get into a fight with all your loved ones, just put me on the radio. I'm going to make it happen. We're going to talk about Bill Clinton and Hillary and Benghazi. You don't want to miss this segment. Please go to samnation.com to get our Instagram or Twitter. And of course, the podcast. Must take that with you everywhere on your iPhone, Android, or whatever device you carry at all times. See you here tomorrow night, 6 p.m. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC.